All right. I will call to order the regularly scheduled, and I'll turn on my microphone first. I'll call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, February 28th, 2017, and ask if everybody would join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you and good morning. Busy day for the Board of Supervisors. Today we just finished a Drainage District Trustee meeting. We've got what's going to be a really fun and lively workshop later today that Loris has put together for us. So we'll move through our formal meeting as quickly and expeditiously as possible. We'll start, as always, with public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. If there's anybody wishing to do so, please come right on up. And seeing no one immediately moving, we'll move on. Let's see. Kyle Breeze is going to come to us at a later date and report. He's not able to make it today. So we're to Nat Tedesco mid-year insurance presentation. Steve Goodhue, Susan Hosher, and Andrew Rickle. Tell him, say your last name.
Rickles.
Sorry, Andrew.
I'm proud.
Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you all for taking time to place us on the agenda today and to give us an opportunity to provide a mid-year review of your insurance relationship. I'm joined today, I'm Steve Goodhue, by the way, with Nap Tedesco Insurance, and I'm joined by Andrew Rickles and Susan Hosher, and for their questions as I work through this presentation, and I'm sure they'll respond as they can. As a reminder, we do an annual review of all your insurance relationship, all of your coverages, your premium, that sort of thing. We do that typically in July or in August. I think Marty had been an opportunity to be part of that this past year, and Loris will look forward to doing that with you. This mid-year review is an opportunity to discuss some claim trends that are occurring throughout the year, to talk about any open items since that annual review, to update you on some ICAP information, and other legislative changes that we may see coming down the path, and then simply answer any questions. And I would say, as a follow-up to today, if there are any questions whatsoever that you have that come to you after I leave here today, feel free to reach out to me. I'd be happy to get back together individually or talk by telephone. So you, I believe you have this presentation in your or this material in your packet. I've got other hard copies if anyone in the audience would like a copy. But I'd like to talk about really three to four things today, four items today. I'd like to talk about some emerging issues and common claims that ICAP is telling us about. I'd like to talk about claims just for a minute as it relates to Story County, a few open items, and then I'll close with some safety, some comments about safety. So in your packet, I've listed under item number one what I'm calling emerging issues, common claims of public entities. Annually, we reach out to ICAP, and we ask them, what sort of claims are occurring across the state with all of the municipalities that you insure? And I would remind you, ICAP insures both cities and counties. I think there's about 520 members. And this list changes on an annual basis because I think claims tend to go in cycles. But I thought you might find some interest in this today. These are not necessarily indicative of the type of claims that Story County is occurring in Story County. But I think they're important for you to know. They're cautions. They're good for you, the staff, and certainly for the Story County Safety Committee to know. And in an effort to minimize risk. And so these are in no particular order. The first is law enforcement. Tasers, body cameras are becoming more popular with law enforcement. I think the Sheriff's Department does utilize both of those items. And so ICAP reported to us that they are seeing some excessive force claims across the state of Iowa. There's certainly national claims, as you see that in the media from time to time. I know the Sheriff's Department does training along this line, and certainly would offer if there's anything ICAP can do along this line. We'll make the same offer to the sheriff. But they are seeing some claims in that law enforcement excessive force area. Cyber liability, we've talked to this board about in the past. We've talked a lot about cyber attacks. That is attacks on your system, your IT system. Today, I want to just mention something a little different. And ICAP reported to us that they are seeing claims along the line of misuse of non-public and confidential information. So that might be information that this building has in terms of employee birth dates, social security numbers, might be something the treasurer's office might have in the form of credit card information, that sort of thing. But they are seeing claims along that line. Haven't had any claims here, but the questions are, what information is being stored in your system? Who has access to that information? And what protections are in place? And I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in the presentation, something ICAP is offering to try to minimize some of these claims that they're seeing. Auto technology is a third. This will come as no surprise as we see more technology, more electronics in cars, that distracted drivers are using that technology. They're using GPS. They're using cell phones. They're using laptops. And as they're doing that, there are accidents. And the statistic we see is that about 14% of all auto fatalities across the country are related to distracted drivers, people using that technology. And so I know we've done some training along that line with on safety days and with Story County employees, but it's important to know and a good reminder to you and to staff. Drones. Drones are probably the hottest issue in our industry right now. They're being used more and more by public entities for search and rescue, which is a good thing. Surveys, building surveys, property surveys, traffic use, that type of thing. But they also come with some risk. And the issue is allegations of improper use or perhaps use whereby residents in residential neighborhoods are feeling that their privacy is being violated. And so the question is, who's being watched with those drones? Why are they being watched and what's done with that information? I don't believe the county has any drones today, and we caution them purchase of those and the use of those. We do have other municipalities that have drones, and we talk about this regularly, but there are increasing claims in the use of drones. The last thing, and I think you're probably aware of this, but is related to the Iowa Meetings Act, and this is related to a claim that is ongoing in Warren County right now. It's called Hutchinson versus Warren County. It's a case whereby the Board of Supervisors were, in essence, utilizing county employees to negotiate on behalf of the board. And I think you may know there's a suit pending. This is the suit, Hutchinson versus Warren County. I think staff is aware of this case as well. We're watching it very closely. Susan and I went to an ICAP meeting, and they spent a good chunk of the day talking about this case. And so I think it's a reminder of the importance of public meetings, the importance of not utilizing employees to negotiate between the three of you. And certainly we're not legal experts, but we've been following this case, and I know you have some knowledge of it as well. So those are five things that are happening in terms of claims across the state. I think we're fortunate to say this county has no claims in any of those areas, drones or auto technology to speak of, but wanted you to be aware of that. A second item is a quick claims review. We did not put a full claims report in the packet today, and if you'd like to see that at some point, we'd be happy to provide that to you. That claims report does have some names, and so we typically don't provide that. But I want to give you a little sense of what the trend line is like in Story County. And so if you look at the first pie chart in the packet, this is work comp claims report. I didn't mention any general liability or property claims. You have very minimal claims along that line. But from the period of July 1, which is the start of your policy period, 2016, through February 1 of this year, you've had 17 claims reported. Only 10 of those claims have paid, and about $9,100 has either been paid or is still in reserve to be paid. Now, what's really good about this is if you look at last year at this time, you had a similar number of claims, but you had $52,000 either that had been paid or in reserve. So that's a really, really positive trend to go from $52,000 to $9,100. If you look below, you'll see a little breakout, a little pie chart showing where those claims are occurring. And we tend to look for trends, and we say, okay, are there more slip and falls? Are there more cuts or bites or whatever the case may be? And there's really no trend here. You can see there was one slip and fall, one overexertion that would be a strain, maybe a back strain or something like that, one cut, a couple eye claims, a bite, and then three other just really miscellaneous categories. So no trends that we can see there. To speak of, and again, not a lot of activity.
Steve, and sure. I don't know if you have this information, but I'm interested looking at the bite claim. But we had, I learned from the Safety Committee audit going to the Justice Center, that we actually have two areas where we're susceptible to that. Of course, we think of animal control, but also from our jailers and employees in the jail. So do you have any idea about how we might compare in those two areas to other counties that have jails?
You are correct. I think both of those I claims, I'm looking at Susan, both those I claims and maybe that by claim did occur in the Justice Center, I believe.
Yes.
My first question, we could certainly look at some other counties. Those are not significant numbers, but I know we've seen claims in that area in the past, too, Lois, and it might beg the need for a little bit of training, and certainly we can talk to the sheriff, or you can direct us to talk to the sheriff about some of that, but it might not be a bad idea. Those are hard to avoid sometimes, dealing with a hostile.
Yeah, it hadn't ever occurred to me until I'm doing the walk.
But by all means, we can take a look and see how it compares. We can ask ICAP that or IMWCA and maybe come back with some
thoughts on
that.
Appreciate
it. Absolutely. If you flip the page, here's a chart that's called Work Comp Claim Trends, and you'll see the number of claims that have been reported going back over a six-year period, back to the 2010-11 period. You can see it ranges from a low of 14 to a high of 28, and last policy period, we had 21 claims reported under work comp. A reminder, we've got 10 year-to-date. So we're trending, you're trending fairly well in that regard. But the really good news on this chart is what's called indemnity. And indemnity is when a claim moves to a point whereby the employee needs time off, and they're being paid to have time off because of that injury, and that's what we refer to as indemnity. You only had two last year. I think this year to date we've had zero. And so that's really good news. That's where your MOD, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, starts to get really impacted when you start to pay out that time off, that paid time away from work. And you look back over 6 years, your high was four, your low was one. We had two last year. We've got zero year to date. That's really, really trending nicely. The bottom chart, I want to just say a couple words about experience modification rates. And we'll certainly talk more about this at the annual review, but that's a very important rate that we monitor and a very important rate to you because it determines your premium for work comp insurance. It's determined, I'm not going to get into a lot of detail this morning, it's determined by taking your actual losses and dividing them by your expected losses. And your expected losses, there's a lot that goes into it, but it's based on the industry, it's based on your payroll, it's based on your claims history. And so the bottom chart is really meant to show you that your incurred losses, those are actual losses and money in reserve for claims that are yet to be paid out. That number has declined a lot. It's going down year to date. It's not significant, as I just mentioned. That's about $9,100. And so that is one of the drivers. I'm going to show you another driver here in a minute. But in general, you always want to be 1.0 or below. And the reason for that is it saves you money on premium. It's also an indication of the safety record of the county and the nature of the county. And so but you can see incurred losses, claims losses went down, and it's going down even further. So now if you flip the page, I mentioned payroll is one of the items. Your payroll actually went down as those Story County Community Life employees rolled off your payroll. And so that payroll deduction you might say is a good thing, and it is. But it also can have a little bit of a tick up in your MOD because it's part of the denominator. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but I wanted to show you when we look at the MOD trend below as to why maybe that the MOD has ticked up a little bit. So the last chart then is your MOD trend. This is the best slide in the presentation. This is terrific. If you go back to 2014, you had a MOD. And by the way, experience modification, right, we call MOD. So Laura Schill here has referred to MOD a lot. 0.61 in 2014, you got to a low of 0.59 in 2015. You were the lowest county in the state. You were the lowest municipality in the state in 2015. And then it ticked up a little bit in 16. You may remember from the prior chart, you had a little bit of claim activity, and then it ticked up a little bit this year to 0.67. But 0.67 is still a terrific MOD. You're still saving 33% in premium, which is a credit back on your annual premium. You're still in the top five counties in the state of Iowa. And I think I actually gave Leanne an article on this last year, and I'll write another article on this. But it's a tremendous number. And the only reason it ticked up from 6.4 to 6.7 is because you had less to pay in community life. So it's a really, really, really good trend, and you're to be complimented and congratulated on that. So let me stop there before I finish up the presentation. Anything on those charts or trends? Okay. So couple, three open items that since we met for the annual review, I just wanted to touch on very quickly today. And, Loris, I'll give you a copy of this at some point. You're welcome to take it today. But ICAP provided a service, and they connected with a firm, or cooperated with a firm called Valuations Northwest, whereby they are offering the appraisal of all the county buildings that they insure across the state of Iowa over a certain, yeah, I think you serve maybe
all outside of that.
And Marty, I'll give you a copy as well. So we did an appraisal of all the Story County buildings, $200,000 value and above. This was done in September of 2015. We received the report, I think it was February, and then we discussed it at the annual review this year. So if you look at this chart, this is Story County at the top, and I think we've highlighted 14 locations. Three of the properties, they might argue, are a little bit overinsured, which is a good problem to have. And then there were 11 properties in their mind that were underinsured. We had about $39, almost $40 million worth of insured value. They're recommending about $46 million in changes. So it's a difference of about $6.6 million. They also sync up the square footage. We've used square footage numbers from probably the past, and they are able, through GPS, to really narrow in. And so there was about a 10,000 square foot difference in square footage. So here's what I'd tell you. This is, by the way, is a good process. It's good that we are looking at the insured values of those. And if you look at these, there are significant differences with one exception, and that's the Justice Center. We had it insured for $15.4 million, which is probably a number we derived at some point in the past with staff. And they're suggesting that building is probably worth and should be insured more at $21 million. So here's what I'd tell you, and here's what's going to happen unless you direct us otherwise. In the cases where they're recommending those three properties are overinsured, the administration building, a Quonset building, and a used truck shed, I would not lower those. That would be you might save a couple dollars by lowering those. In the cases where the 11 properties are underinsured, we're going to suggest to you that we change those values, sync them up to what they're recommending. That would be done at the July 1 renewal, July 1, like what you would call 18 renewal. And then at some point, ICAP will provide a cost to do that, but there won't be any cost this year, and you can decide down the road if you want to incur that cost to increase it. But I think it's a good thing to do. There's no cost really to do this over the next 12 months, and then at some point we'll talk about what the premium impact would be. It won't be significant here, but it's a good process. I want to make you aware of it. Of course, I didn't know if you had seen any valuations before, but Marty, I think you may have seen this at the mid-year review, but
I had not. I just want to make a note, since we don't have a copy for the public, but I'd like to make a note on the Justice Center, because if my math is right, we're 40% underinsured on this building. $6 million, that we've got it insured for $15 million, and the new valuation, which should be around $21 million, just so.
Yeah, absolutely, but so that we're completely clear, we are still in good shape even today based on our umbrella.
Because we have that's a very good point, Rick, and let me explain that. We have a blanket insurance policy. So, and that blanket would be about $40 million. And so in the event that the Justice Center might be displaced due to some sort of peril, technically we could tap into that blanket and we should be fine.
But what's not reasonable is, now that we know that the valuation is different, it's not reasonable to just maintain that lower insurance rate. But we were never exposed in terms of a potential loss.
Thank you.
It could always be subject to a co-insurance penalty. You want to sync these up. It's a good thing to do. We'll do it at the renewal, and then we'll talk about it.
So you mentioned that we would, if no direction was given, we would just automatically link up the ones that are undervalued, either by a little or by a substantial amount. But you suggested we wouldn't change the ones that maybe we've got too much insurance in. I'm just wondering why, just to keep it as simple as we can, why we wouldn't just insure straight to the new insurable value. We had the work done. It may only be a couple bucks per year to change. But I like things tied to something, unless you guys feel entirely different about it. I just go through and say, this is, we had the valuation done. Let's just insure it at this level.
I do think for ICAP that's probably easier, just to take the new values that they're recommending, which is the second column, but straight across the board, we can certainly talk about it. I know Cal, I don't know how much time Cal has spent on this report or sifting through this, but it might be an exercise we can go through. Certainly.
That's my suggestion, Laura, Marty, unless you guys feel differently, then if we had the new valuation, the insurable valuation's done, let's just go with those in terms of what we end up insuring each of these buildings for. We're still going to have that umbrella policy that's going to take care of us in the event we miss somewhere. But it's not reasonable to me that we look at the numbers and we still insure at a different level.
Yep.
Well, and I see, you know, the first one that's listed as a little bit overinsured right now is the administration building. And we've been trying to keep things up around here, but in the future, I think we're eventually looking at some possible changes, right, down the road. I mean, some
sure, absolutely. But anytime we do something like that, we're going to
adjust the valuation. So I'm thinking, to go with that new insurable value, just to go down. And then the other two are the Quonset and the East Truck Shed, and in the future also, not immediate future, but things will happen with those also. So I think Rick's suggestion about just going down that new insurable value level.
We have stricken the Community Life Center. We don't own that anymore, that's on your list. I mean, there's some changes that happen on here. I just would like us to stay tied to something. And Steve, are we going to do this every 5 years?
If you intend, I think Valuations Northwest and ICAP is doing this over about a 3-year process.
Yep.
Municipalities look at across the state. So I think we'll look at this again in 3 years. Yep. And from no cost to the county, it's a nice. You didn't have to engage an appraiser to go to this, and we'll do it every 3 years.
Well, and then we got something that they say, well, why did you have the Justice Center insured for X amount? Well, because we had it. We had it appraised, and this is what came out.
Yep.
All right, we'll sync it up to the second column, which is the recommended new insurable value, and go forward. Fair enough. Any other questions on that?
No.
If you flip the page, you'll see a sheet called Technology Evaluations. You remember when I said one of the common 5 or 6 claims in the state right now is related to cyber and the misuse of information. So knowing that ICAP will see more claim activity there, they are also offering up a service that is, in essence, a technology evaluation. And we talked about this, I think, recently with staff. I think you're undergoing some sort of technology review or evaluation right now. And I think maybe the suggestion was that we revisit this in the fall. But this is a free service they're offering where they send in this young lady, Amanda Davros, and she looks at network security, management networks, business continuity. She looks for any gaps in your IT program, any places where there might be an attack or misuse or whatever the case may be. It's a free service by ICAP. I think maybe the suggestion was we look at this in November or sometime this fall once you're through your technology process.
Yeah, so that Laura and Marty, when we had our meeting that included Deb, Jessica, Alyssa, and me visiting with them, as we talked about this, I suggested that it just makes sense that if we're getting an offer of a free evaluation from our insurance carriers, even though we just went through an IT audit, Alyssa told me it was 6 months, a year ago, we went through an IT audit. It just makes sense to me that we would try to utilize any resource that we look at, because it's not the known that scares me, it's the unknown that scares me, and the more eyes we can get on that, the better.
Good point. We'll circle back in the fall and do that if that's appropriate.
And I assume Alyssa has talked to Barb about this one.
Okay, fair enough. Last open item, we've talked about this in the past, but I wanted to bring it back up again. It looks like you were talking about drainage districts earlier, but just a reminder, ICAP does now provide some insurance for drainage districts. And you'll see some information in this summary I put together. I think you know, and I know Jessica and her office know, that there's immunity from torts at the state but not the national level. This whole discussion about insuring drainage districts was brought about as a result of the suit between the Des Moines Water Works and 3 Northwest Iowa counties. Initially, ICAP was having some challenge being able to insure these drainage districts because they were not considered standalone entities. They did introduce some legislation last year to make those drainage districts standalone entities. That legislation did not continue, but the key definition here is if there's same governance, meaning if this board has governance over those drainage districts, you can insure those drainage districts. You can insure them for general liability. You can insure them for any public official, director and officer, DNO coverage, or any decisions you may make that may result in a claim. You insure them for property coverage. It also provides some contractual liability for railroads and any interaction with railroads. The initial premium they suggested to us was about $100 a district. I think you've got 92 districts. But then I came back and said, actually, we'd like the relationship with Story County, and it would be considerably less than that. So it's probably $50, $50 to $75 per district. It requires a separate application. You've got to prove the test that you have same governance. I think many times across the state have different drainage district boards. Here, I think we could prove that test. But just wanted to leave it out there. I know this is ongoing discussion in the Iowa legislature. We did talk about this maybe a year ago and decided to wait and see what happens at the legislative level. But certainly the opportunity is still there to ensure those 92.
Sure. How many counties have taken advantage of this?
Not many at this point because, Rick, they've been challenged to determine or to show same governance. So I don't know if Story County is different than many counties across the state, but they've not been able to prove that same governance because they have drainage district boards. But there have not been many at this point take this coverage.
Yeah. So one of the concerns that I have in this is the way the law is set up right now, the county is not liable for a drainage issue. Now, clearly that's being challenged right now. But for me, one of the concerns with this has been and remains that this almost pierces the veil of the separation, the theoretical separation between the drainage districts and the county. When we sat down today and talked about drainage districts, we did not do it as Board of Supervisors members. We did it as drainage district trustees. And I'm worried that if the county were to assume insurance, thereby, in my mind, assuming liability for these drainage districts, what it does to us. Jess, I know you and I have talked about that in the past. And I don't think there's a solid answer at this point. It's just a reasonable concern.
I have similar concerns. It's an interesting, unknown legal issue.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Our job to recommend and
absolutely
continue to remind you.
Well, and the two new board members need to. I think this is not simply a Board of Supervisors decision because I believe that the dollars to do this would come out of each drainage district trustee. I mean, I just think it's a complex issue, but Steve, I think it's completely worth it for Loris and Marty to be able to start to analyze this in their head and try to determine what's in the best interest of not only Story County, but each one of our drainage districts.
I would be interested in receiving more information on the property coverage aspect of this.
Sure.
To find out, is it property coverage for us? I'm hoping we don't have a lot of property other than culverts sitting in drainage district, in the drainage ditches. But also, does that cover if we damage somebody else's property in digging? And
liability.
Liability. So I'd entertain you sending me more information on it to bring myself up to speed.
It might be worth a discussion with ICAP. Maybe we ask Casey Kaler or someone to come up sometime. And
yep.
We could certainly do it as a board. We can do it with staff initially. And we can dig just a little deeper on this. And
it's not a real clear-cut issue.
It's not a clear-cut.
It's absolutely worth digging in and trying to figure out what makes sense.
And I understand the hesitancy of the county attorney and Rick, but
last thing I say before we close, again, just really want to applaud you on your safety efforts. You've got one of the lowest mods in the state. You've got, a real strong safety program between the safety committee, which I think, Loris, you've now joined. You're going to hear it. And I think, as you know, we've been doing some safety building audits, which has been very, very good and very informational and somewhat fun, actually. If you know, you allow ICAP and INWCA to come up once a year to do loss control visits. I know the board just received, or the safety committee just received a grant for an AED machine. And so there's continual focus, I think, on safety in this county. It's a real tribute to you and your focus that tone you set as a board. We're pleased to be involved in that and just really want to congratulate you on your strong record of safety. So that brings me to an end. Appreciate the opportunity. Be happy to answer any last-minute questions. Or she did mention copies for the public. I did bring copies, and so I'll leave those. I'll leave those right here.
Okay, thank
you. Anyone from the public would like to see a copy of the presentation. Any questions?
Any questions for Steve? I'd just start by saying how much we, as a county, value our relationship with Nat Tedesco and the service you provide us in our work comp and our general liability. I know that from the moment I walked in on the board, and I'm sure that Laura Samardi either feel the same or are soon going to feel the same, I've appreciated the service aspect of it. Again, I know that Alyssa, Jessica, and Deb Shildrell spend a lot of time on the phone and communication with Susan. Anytime something's going on here, I think that's one of the main reasons that Story County compares so favorably to other counties is our close working relationship with Nat Tedesco, and sure appreciate you guys, that the time and energy you put into serving Story County.
Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, no. We just came out of about an hour's meeting on a drainage district, so ironically enough, that's where you're closing up. You've got a term in there, a railroad contractual liability, because a number of these districts that we're doing big projects in have a component with a railroad. Could you flesh that one out for me, please?
Well, I think that there is a, and we have other clients who deal with railroads on a regular basis, contractors and others, developers. And so I think that occasionally, you know, when you look at those contracts, and I assume Jessica's looked at a few of those, you know, there's a lot of risk transfer, or they're attempting to put the risk on you or the liability on you. And so I think it does pick up some liability, as I understand it from ICAP, in the event that you would, you know, do damage to their property, their easements, whatever the case may be. I think they're ICAP's assuming with this policy some liability coverage. So, but we can flush that out a little bit more, Mark.
We can follow up on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe I know that because of the standard liability contract, it's excluded. So I think they may know that, just saying, hey, you know,
if you want to pay a little more, we
pay a little more. It's there.
Right. Yep.
Well, it's moving target.
It is part of the conversation we just had this morning. So,
yeah, absolutely.
As I talk about a little bit more, we'll do that.
We'll certainly do a little more research at the request of the board and come back and talk further about it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
I
appreciate it.
I just want to make a note. Alyssa, the safety committee meets this afternoon, right? Okay. And we'll be elsewhere, but if you would pass on Steve's comments about the safety of the
well.
You're
going to
be there. Well, never mind.
Directly.
Don't pass it on. We'll let Steve speak for himself. Sorry. Okay.
You think we'll be busy at 2:00?
I think we will.
All right. Consideration of minutes from both the February 14th canvas and our February 21st meeting.
I would move approval of the minutes.
Exactly.
So we have a motion to second. Any notations, additions, corrections? Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions as listed. Board.
So moved.
Second.
Motion to second. Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda. Board.
Don't see anything worth staring at. I move to approve our consent agenda as placed before us today.
I second that.
We got a motion to second. Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. No public hearing items today. First time in a little while that we haven't had any. Additional items, discussion and consideration of the status of relocation assistance for Crestview Mobile Home Park residents. Carla.
Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
Carla. How long have we been dealing with this?
April 26th of 2016.
Okay, so coming up on a year.
Yes, yes. Thank you for letting me come speak with you today on this. I provided a summary of the relocation assistance that our office has been providing at the direction of the Board of Supervisors. To summarize, or give a history of that, back on April 26th of 16, the board had approved up to $1,000 of relocation assistance for any occupied mobile home at the Crestview Mobile Home Park. And there was a modified application process for an individual to qualify for that assistance through our general assistance program.
By modified, what do you mean? What did we do?
You bet. We lifted a lot of our general assistance criteria. The criteria that individuals needed to meet were to be a resident of the mobile home park and to exhaust all other community agencies. So we were not looking at any household income, any resource information, whether they had lost employment within the last 90 days, and we're not also looking at if they were a resident for a minimum of 6 consecutive months. So with that, we held an informational meeting for the residents of the mobile home park. We worked with other county offices to get that organized, and that was held on May 10th. We had a good amount of residents from the mobile home park attend. At that time, we talked about the application process and the relocation assistance. We received a couple of applications that night from individuals. And then on in June, we had pending applications where folks had not completed or returned to our office. So our staff reached out via phone to those individuals that we had the applications on to follow up. And we also then on June 20th sent out letters to the individuals, the known individuals that we had not received an application from. To date, our office has assisted 8 unduplicated households, and that consisted of about 25 individuals and family members for a total assistance of $6,782. Some of the items that money paid for was rent, deposit. We paid for a storage unit for a couple of individuals, and also for an individual to prepare his mobile home to be moved. He had to have a tongue welded back on. In December, as we still had some pending applications, we mailed out letters to those pending applications on December 21st, asking them to get back to us by January 16th. We did not hear from anyone. We did have one person follow up with us after the 16th, and that individual has already moved, relocated. So, and a couple of letters that we had sent out were returned to us, so those individuals apparently are no longer at the mobile home park. So we still have the 5 pending applications, and I'm here today to look for direction from the board on what you would like for us to do with those. The Board of Health has listed the Boyle order and the closure order for Crestview. A couple of options that I identified here were to have the pending applications remain as they are and close those out on June 30th, so it gives some time still for folks, or to completely close out the relocation assistance at this time.
If I recall, we were down to only 12 residents being able to stay at Crestview, correct? 14 units entirely, but one was a house?
I think we were doing by hookups.
Yeah, hookups. Okay. So of the pendings that you have, of the 5 left, are they all away from Crestview then? Now living out of Crestview?
We don't have that information. A couple, like I said, their letter came back to us. It's not deliverable.
Oh, of the 5,
yes,
2 the letter came back. Yes, okay.
Yes. And then the others we did not hear from.
And what about the one who responded after the 16th? Was that of the 5?
We had actually mailed out 6 letters, right, and then they followed up. So we have just the 5 that we don't know the status of.
For the 3 that we are didn't even get one back, did the applications list cell phone numbers or employers anyway to try and reach out to them verbally?
We would not have collected any employer information.
Okay.
They may have cell phone numbers on those, and we can try and give them a call and see if we can reach them.
That's my thought when I looked at the 2 options, is that, you know, rather than close the relocation assistance effectively immediately, let's at least try to make a telephone call, look at those applications, or did they list a relative? I always would like to know, that they say, oh, no, they've all got it all taken care of. I mean, you know, before we just cut off the money, you never know where somebody's needs are. I happen to occasionally run into one of the people I believe we helped out there, okay? And every time she sees me, she expresses gratitude, and I point out to her that it was the previous board, well-deserving of that gratitude. But And I guess maybe that's why it stays in my mind that people's living and work situations vary. And in her particular case, I know they had to see a lot of apartments before they found somebody who would take her, take the two of them and their animals. Was kind of their situation. So I'd be inclined to keep it open until June the 30th. Have you guys try and make some phone calls or go through the app to see even if there's a letter that could, an outreach letter that could go out to a reference listed or something. And then that at least gives people a little more time. It's not costing us anything. We're not losing interest on the money. Staff time is going to be minimal on these follow-ups. And then you never know if somebody comes back. Maybe their original living situation they found, it may take a few months even for them to figure out it's not going to work out.
Well said. I would agree. I think this is something that this is small dollars. We're trying to offer up an opportunity to better people's lives. I have no qualms in that, Laura. So I think you got it spot on.
Okay. So I'm hearing direction from the board to leave it open through the end of June. Try any way that we can to reach out to the pending applications. But there will be no dollars available as of July 1st.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. We haven't
moved
that yet.
I move that we leave this open until June 30th of 2017 and that we direct staff to use reasonable attempts to extend their outreach just to ascertain if their people might be interested.
I wasn't sure if you were done.
Second. I think
we got the gist of it there, but yep. I would second that.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Carl, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Carl. You bet.
Next is discussion consideration of FY18 health insurance renewal between Story County and Aetna. Let's wait on Debbie Dean. Hi, Debbie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We are good.
Good morning. So what you have in front of you is our renewal for effective July 1st, 2017. Just a little glance over it. Our renewal rate is 9.7%.
Excellent.
Great.
It is sad that we're excited that it's only one.
quite sad.
Well, when we were budgeting at, 20?
Uh-huh.
To come in under, just slightly under half of that, that is good for the taxpayers.
Well, don't underestimate the, and I mean this in a really, really nice way, the strong-arm ability of Elizabeth, particularly Debbie, in getting it down to the 9.7%. It wasn't the initial offer.
It wasn't the initial offer.
No. We did not want to take this to market. We wanted to do make a deal here, and thank you, both of you, working behind the scenes to make that happen.
Thank you. Yeah, so what we have, we didn't have any changes to our plan with this renewal. It's exactly what we had last year. Just a reminder that we converted over to Aetna July 1st, 2016. It was Coventry Insurance prior to that. So we made that change last July. Really, there's nothing you'll find in the back of this packet. There is information about an EAP. We're not recommending to switch. We like the current EAP that we have for our employees. So that just comes with a renewal every time we get it. So we're just looking to keep the two plans, the $500 deductible and the $1,000 deductible, exactly the same as we have for this year for our employees for next fiscal year.
So no change in our employees, an increase in cost of 10%.
Slightly less.
That means our employees, for each plan, for our $500 deductible for single, they'll pay $5.25 more a month, almost $28 more a month for family. And our $1,000 deductible, our single and individuals that have single plans will pay 50 cents more a month.
And so what's their total premium?
$5.61 a month is what they pay. And for the family, $1,000 deductible, that employee contribution is going up $13.15. So they'll pay a total of $148.85 a month for the $1,000 plan.
Amazing.
Which is pretty competitive.
It is very competitive.
Yeah. It's a good benefit for our employees. Our employees do a great job. We actually, when we pay the 99%, we're saving money over the plan where we're only paying, 90% just because of the difference in cost, right? Mm-hmm.
I would move that we renew with Aetna for our health insurance plans for fiscal year 18.
I would second that.
Motion and second. Any further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Great job, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Debbie, we're sure glad you're with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad to be here.
This has been part of the very pleasant in coming on the board and seeing what we're able to offer our employees, especially the family.
Yep, because I came out of a Fortune 500 setting this time last year. It doesn't even get close to that.
And my husband works for the university, and yes, does not even close to it.
So. Yeah.
Next, a discussion consideration of contract between IP Pathways and IT for installation of replacement firewalls for Story County. It's an unbudgeted item that, as I recall, Barb, came to us as we talked about our FY18 budget, and we talked about moving it up. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Before we start,
sure.
I have a question for Barb. On both this contract and the next one, are these time sensitive?
Yes.
And the reason I ask this is that I don't believe Jessica Reynolds has probably had a chance to talk to you yet. She's not here. But I had asked Jessica to go and investigate the current, it seems like, policy of a couple of departments when it comes to contracts that supposedly claim proprietary information. Jessica has done that research, and we went in and talked to the county auditor, to Lucy Martin, yesterday. And Jessica's explaining to the various people what the actual limitations are going to be in being able to withhold a contract from us looking at it, but she needs to talk to you about this. Basically, the new thing is either information is confidential or not. There's a proprietary needs to be run by Jessica. That the assumption is all public contracts are in fact public. And if there's information that needs to be redacted from a contract, Jessica will, I feel funny talking with, but since she's not here, and then Jessica will redact the information that the company says is proprietary. But the contract needs to be seen. It's a public contract. And as we were having a discussion over there with Lucy yesterday, then Lucy brought up that the majority of the proprietaries that get sent to Shelley are in fact from IT. And there's some real question, and I'm going to be very strong in questioning what the proprietary IT contract that truly is offering information that if their competitors knew it would be of serious impact to their business, or what is just because they just don't want people to know what they did. And so I know Jessica's coming down to you to talk to you about that. She'll also be looking more at RFPs, but that's why I asked if this is time sensitive or not, if we could move it until you have that discussion with Jessica. So time sensitive.
Yeah, can you give us an idea what time frame you're dealing with, Barb?
We'd like to get these installed in March because we do have two other large projects that we need to get done this fiscal year. The hardware is in place. The reason we've asked IP Pathways to install it for us is, number one, they have supported our network when we've had issues, so they know it. And number two, they also support the 911 networks, and this would be our leg of that. So we want to make sure. I think there would be too much of a learning curve if we brought in another vendor. And this is something I don't want to take the risk on.
Okay. Then I'm comfortable, I guess, given that this has been sprung upon you as you're sitting here at 10:50. Okay, then I'm comfortable moving forward under the old policy of how we've handled these. And hearing the presentation. I just wanted to let her know up front if we had lots of
time. That's outstanding, and I just want to point out, so what I'm hearing you say is, and you've been really consistent on this, your preference is going to be that anything that doesn't need to be redacted is out there, and our current practice is if some part of it is confidential, then it has all become confidential, and we need to really look at that and see where it's going. All I want to say is if, as you and Jessica dig through this, you come to the realization that this contract, even though it's, if it had already been approved, mm-hmm. can be redacted and then released. We'll do that.
And part of this, as Jessica to say, is that Jessica had indicated that going forward it will be up to the vendor to prove that this is truly proprietary information. And that's why I think Jessica will probably be working with you a little bit on this, because some people will come forward and say that it's proprietary information when maybe it doesn't meet the definition of it, of truly proprietary. So,
I appreciate that we're going to let our county attorney be the person. Okay, so now back to the presentation, IP Pathways.
Super.
Yes, well, originally when we had, according to our hardware replacement schedule, you know, the firewalls came up for replacement this year. At that time, we did have a network administrator. We didn't after that, and now we do again. But Kyle's only been in the position a short time, and it was something that is this important to our network and to keep us safe, and so we don't have any cybersecurity breaches. We feel that hiring our vendor to complete the install with Kyle assisting would be the best plan of action. So that's why the labor wasn't budgeted on this.
Good.
What's the amount?
It's about a little over $8,000. And I have gotten, we work with several vendors, not only IP Pathways, and this is, it's pretty reasonable. I mean, they're right in the ballpark of what other vendors charge. And the quantity of one would be one day. So this is for 8 hours with two technicians each.
So Rick, it looks like you have something there on this. Is that correct? Or?
That's what I have. And this.
Okay.
Okay. And that.
So
what we're talking about is we need to pay, we got the equipment in-house, we need to pay somebody to get it installed appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the dollars in this year's budget to utilize to pay this roughly $8,000 to get this equipment installed.
Well, I did have, and then during our budget sessions, Lisa asked me to review my budget, see what I could take out, and I did take out about $17,000. So if I hadn't taken that out, this would be covered.
Yeah, but that money's still in your budget.
Out? Okay,
yeah.
Then I do have it.
Your re-estimation is so that Lisa has some idea of where we're headed, but the money that the Board of Supervisors put in your budget at the beginning of the year, you still have access to.
Okay.
You do have those dollars available to you in your original budget. True.
Then I guess I'm good.
Okay.
I would
go ahead. Yeah.
I would move that we approve IT having the contract with IP Pathways for installation of the replacement firewalls.
Second.
Motion second. Further discussion.
I just would like to point out also, in conjunction with our KubeCon project, that these new firewalls will allow us to create VPN access to all county employees who can't make it to the building but still need to access the system. So our current firewalls do not have this capability. So that's another caveat.
Where they went?
Okay. Further discussion.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Please install the firewalls. Next. Next, we are talking about price quotes to purchase replacement hardware for server infrastructure between IP Pathways and Story County.
Oh, this was an unbudgeted and unplanned item. What we do, a little bit about our infrastructure, as our servers age, we move them to the redundant path. So we have our production servers and then we have our secondary servers. So one of our secondary servers is failing. It's throwing errors, it's rebooting by itself. We originally planned to replace these in FY19. This one is being a little premature. But what will happen if this server is not replaced is we won't have redundancy for some of our production data. And what we will do then when we purchase the new server is put that into production and use the current production server as our redundant backup.
How much?
this is about $12,000.
Yeah, $12,847.71, but that includes $1,496 for 3-year support. Talk to me about the support on this hardware.
The support, and the current one is out of support and only lasts for 3 years, but this would be if the hardware fails in any way, if there's a part that fails, you get free replacement, you get free customer support, customer service. After 3 years, you're pretty much on your own.
But this support would only be for the server we're purchasing?
Correct.
Okay.
And what is the standard warranty? Like when we buy this thing, if we don't purchase any additional support, what is the standard warranty?
90 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we do not need installation. We can do this in-house. So that's one good thing.
Okay. Questions, thoughts?
You got a server failing, you need to replace it.
Yep.
Okay. So I would move to purchase replacement hardware for our server infrastructure from IP Pathways.
I would second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Board.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is discussion and consideration of potential technical assistance and township program, as we refer to Leanne Harder.
Good morning, Leanne.
Hi, Leanne.
It's early.
For us, it is very early.
Well, what I placed on your agenda was a copy of the Code of Iowa, Section 358, Chapter 359, which governs townships and township PCs. Just as a reminder, the board directed staff to look into any opportunities to provide technical assistance funding for different projects to our townships. I did have a half-slip of paper I handed out at the township trustee meeting. Only got one actually returned back to me.
What township was that?
In Collins Township.
Okay.
And that individual stated, not sure as our 20E with the city splits responsibilities and purchase, very concerned with the ongoing problems we are having with paging and dispatching problems. Our city has been dragging their feet on any township or any updates, maybe more direct updates from emergency management throughout the process too. So the question was simply put to them, if you had an opportunity to participate in this type of program, what type of projects would you foresee possibly being used or being identified? Just a couple things I've brainstormed, and Jessica, you can feel free to add as you want to. Possibly looking at coop cog planning, and especially knowing how township clerks and trustees, the process by which, they're elected, but they transfer duties and responsibilities, whether or not there could be anything along those lines for basic coop cog planning that they could be undertaking, or even building on that, purchase those computers and software for digital record keeping. Really, we did not get was really hopeful following the township trustee meeting. I get, yes, we need this, and this. But in looking at Code of Iowa, township responsibilities are clearly defined. They're really limited, really fence viewing, cemetery, and then fire and emergency service provision. And so we're stepping outside the box a little bit here, but nothing would preclude it from occurring. Do you want to add anything?
I would just add that I've issued a legal opinion that the county, it is lawful for the county to provide grant assistance to township trustees from the general fund.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't mean that we have to do it. It just means that we can. And Leanne, so I'll ask you to think back to when we talked about doing some technical assistance for cities. It seems to me that we didn't get a lot of input from cities at that point either. In fact, we didn't get a whole lot of enthusiasm until they dug in and figured out what it was and could be used for. I don't know that this one is on that same pathway. Townships are very clearly different. I've got two real concerns with townships, and I'll say this. Overall, our townships we're lucky that we have as well-functioning townships as we have in Story County. They are predominantly outstanding, but it is generally in each one of those driven by an individual, one person who is maintaining records, who's kind of running things for our townships. I get concerned of what kind of succession planning we have, how we make sure that we maintain the records and things that we need going forward when a certain individual in any township is no longer participating. And the second one, you mentioned it, is the whole upgrade to E911 and how that is going to impact, different for different townships, each one of our townships. And so I feel like it's worth exploring further, especially, I guess the first question was, would it be legal for us to explore any assistance? We know now that it is. I'd like us to explore further. Is there a concept where we could be helpful to a township, our townships, in doing some kind of structural planning, or ability to maintain records or things like that?
Yes, code doesn't provide townships with a whole lot of responsibilities. We now have a legal ruling that gives us a pathway. We know we have needs. Some of these townships are very articulate on what they would like to see and responsibilities they have. Some townships have cemeteries, some towns. Some people are more engaged. Some people have trustees don't even show up. They're only a name on a roster. And you have sporadic commitment and involvement, but you can say it well enough, maybe better than saying maybe we were dependent on some of these townships on one person. And that gives pause because they don't join us one day, and then what do we do? But I think, you know, setting on the 911, we have a technology that is woefully inadequate. If you look on a coverage map of where our repeaters go within the county, we have a repeater setting on the very western side of Zeering that doesn't even get to Callsburg. And we have some issues going forward on that, you know, knowing what's all behind it, that you sit there and talk to these people that are sometimes not really just a member of a township, but they're almost a member of a rural fire department or a volunteer fire department, and there is some crossover, and I think maybe that is where we should be intersectional, and I would encourage that discussion to go forward.
The day of the township meeting, I spoke with one township clerk, and it may be the same one. It was down in the same area, around the very southeast part of the county. She had mentioned that they would really like to get more information and input related to emergency planning and division of duties between the fire responsibilities. It sounds like that they were providing to her Township Axel. I think that's who their fire department was had a cooperative agreement with. But also she was concerned because there's going to be a big construction project just south of the Story County line on, I believe it's 69. And she's concerned about who's going to be providing responder services in the event there's a large construction accident. And so that was another area she was a concern. So what I heard there is that she might have, or that township might have, some use for some technical assistance money to bring in an expert. And this person also required that when we do our quadrant meetings this next quarter, would we be willing to bring out our emergency management person or O'Keefe or the deputy, Melissa. So I think exploring it also is a good idea, both continuity and from fire and questions along fire and emergency.
Okay, so we're getting fairly clear direction. What specifically, Leanne, do you need from us to take the next step and put together what technical assistance might look like for attention?
Just basically, I think it would be limited to direction today from you to staff to develop a resolution and program and bring it forward. And if it would be at this fiscal year, I would shoot for March 14th to bring it forward. Possibly some direction as to the amounts that would be made available, so I could build that into the resolution. And then on my end, I can coordinate with each of the township trustees, the clerks, get information off of them.
I would do that in the interim. If we were considering doing this and bringing this back to ourselves, I would ask that you do a reach out at least to the trustee clerks and let them know this is moving on this.
Yeah, so I would suggest that if this board wants to give Leanne that direction, that we give her a very similar direction to what a previous board gave her in building this same kind of concept for our municipalities, and that was, if I'm not mistaken, a dollar maximum of $3,000 per county, per municipality in that case. I'm suggesting a maximum of $3,000 per township that wants to take advantage and have a very specific list of criteria that would meet accessing that $3,000.
I mean, you're gating it, so they have to meet these requirements before they get the funds, correct?
Before they get the funds, and it would all be based on this fiscal year. So the board would be committing up to, we've got 16 townships, $3,000, up to $48,000, which we're not going to be getting very close to that, but up to $48,000, but it would have to be utilized yet in FY17. We're not committing to anything for FY18 unless you guys decide that that's what we're doing. That's what this conversation would be more about.
I look forward to the interest coming back that Leanne gets in that respect. At least, you know, you've established the parameters as spoken. That will be fine, but I look forward to hearing what she hears.
We're good with that direction. So we're not approving anything today.
Right.
What we're saying to Leanne is build a possible program for us that would include up to $3,000 per township under specific criteria. We've heard from County Attorney Jessica Reynolds that it is legal for us to, in fact, do that as long as it's general fund dollars that we're talking about using. Anything else for us today?
Just that your only restriction is that it be for a public purpose, which I'm sure it will be, but that's your only lawful restriction on this dollars.
I would move then, if that be the case, that we direct Leanne to bring us back a technical assistance plan for our townships on March 14th.
I would second.
All right, motion and second for the discussion.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Holson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Thanks.
Thank you. Look forward to hearing how that goes.
Next is discussion consideration of purchasing a camera package with audio-video capabilities and a one-year license for multimedia software package for $1,539.86 in FY17 for use by the outreach coordinator. And Laura, you brought this to us.
I did. We had discussed this during the budget workshop. This is part of what I believe that we need to move forward with outreach in the future, being able then to not only provide our outreach coordinator the multimedia tools or the tools she needs to produce multimedia projects, but also then as she would bring on an intern to be able to use this. I did the research. Leah and I had talked, and she said, why don't you look for it? You probably know a little bit more about various options. So as far as the camera itself, I'd like to talk about camera first. I did look. I wanted to find an external camera outfit that obviously could shoot high-quality video but also could accommodate an external mic. But I tried to keep it in the low range, price range, because usually you're looking at $1,000 to $1,200 for professional cameras that can also shoot audio video with an external mic. And that's not talking about the really high end you see out there we're talking about. But I was able to find this one that's on sale at Best Buy right now for $599. I believe, offers more than enough capacity. There were some cameras I looked at that had a attachable lens that went up much higher in the zoom feature, but I really do not believe that in the outreach function in shooting what would be publicity photos in most cases or information photos that we would ever need to zoom in to look at a 200 or 300 millimeter lens. So I was more interested then also in the capabilities for it to do Wi-Fi, to be able to operate via short remote, to be able to turn it on, etc. So I found this package.
Okay.
So it would be replacing the camera that we have now?
No, it's an addition to.
Okay.
This is for Leanne and anybody else who would be working under her, our outreach coordinator, when they're going out to either do things like outside to celebrate the 50th anniversary of this building, going out for ribbon cuttings, going out to document stories, to take photos, to whether it be both a still photo combination that would go in our story, but also then maybe a 5-minute video that would go on our website. No, this would be totally separate from this.
This one's ITs, is that right?
This one is ITs, and this actually, the way that I originally set it up, unless Barb has a problem with this, was that IT would still be responsible for it, purchase it, handle, you know, that because she's the one who handles the equipment, but it would be permanently assigned to the outreach coordinator, so that it would be, rather than the outreach coordinator having to check it out every time, or it would be permanently assigned to the outreach coordinator, the intern, or anyone who would be working with the outreach coordinator. So it might be another staff member, but it would be specifically to be producing for our outreach efforts. So then I also then, of course, got the put into the price quote the bag. And the way the bag is priced, it happened to be priced with a tripod, which is a good idea to take out. I don't know that this is the most optimum tripod down the field for all uses, but the nice thing about the grill is it is bendable and it does some things there. So this is what I would want to use if I were producing things to put on the internet. That would be of a high quality, but not the expectation here at first that we're actually going with a professional production, but it produces a very high quality video, or can, and obviously it can be cut back, the quality.
Sure. Well, I think that's completely the right approach, Laura. So at this point, if we want to do something professional, let's contract with a professional to come in and
right.
do it for us,
right.
but this would handle our in-house...
Would handle our in-house capabilities and easy to operate.
Unless you just really feel the desire to go into depth on Adobe Creative Suites, all I need to know about that is that the software package that we need for Leanne to be able to manipulate the information, the video that's shot and get it out to the public?
Not only the video that is shot, it has that capacity. It also is a new pagination system, a layout system, and also allows her to work with still photography. I will tell you that the package is we're overbuying, but if these elements are purchased separate from Adobe, we're already over $100 a month just to purchase the three that she's likely to use, whereas the software as a package is $69 a month. So better for us to overbuy than to pay too much. It's only a one-year subscription, and at the end of the year, we can go in and evaluate if she in fact is using the three, possibly up to five that I identified. It's got 20 different programs in it, applications in it. And
okay, so then we'll be able to utilize this to assess what we're actually using and then go to a subscription service of what we're actually using.
What we use if we decide that or not. So, so yes, and the other reason I selected it is because what I have on my personal computer and I'm somewhat familiar with using some of those. Okay.
Questions?
Leanne, what are you going to use this for?
Right now, when I produce flyers, our newsletters, whatever, I use our publisher, which is an office product, publisher, Word, whatever. And then I convert it to PDF or do whatever I need to manipulate it. When I go to send it to publishing companies, or specifically we're talking about the our story in this case, that's not compatible. That software package that I use with like the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So one, I will have a learning curve to use a whole new suite of software,
sure.
which I know I'll be successful at, but that's probably my one cautionary note.
But once you get through that learning curve, knowing it will take you more time early, is it our expectation, this is for both of you, that it's actually going to take less of your time to do what you do with
If you look at the C2C plan, this software package is how they created the C2C plan. And when they delivered it to us, it had to be, they had some
to convert it.
Some conversion on their end, and we got it really in a static PDF document that no one here can manipulate to a great degree.
So this will allow you to continue to work with that?
The photography right now, I use my personal cell phone for the most part, my personal camera. I brought it from home, and the camera, digital camera itself, is about 15 years old, and the quality is very, very poor.
The one we have, actually, we do.
Shots.
We got an old Polaroid back in the back in the office. I'm not sure they've got any of the. I used to shake those.
Oh no, they are now. Those are popular again.
I've heard enough. This is one of those no-brainer things. Loris, I appreciate you and Leanne digging into it and figuring out where we need to be. My ask is that you do a great job keeping track of what parts of this. What I'm picturing is a large software program with many different components that you're actually using so that in the future we can get those parts that we actually use and not be paying for something we're not using.
My only concern I still have other than the learning curve is the ability of my tablet to operate all this. And I run a Surface tablet and I run ArcView, which our geographic and our GIS system. That's a hog in and of itself. And so there's some red flags that might be coming up.
Yeah.
My tablet's been having a lot of issues lately.
And I think that was the part of the conversation that I think will be coming in next, also as we look at setting up a station for an intern. We know we've been having terrible trouble in getting this video even edited and having to go down to AIT. So we need to look at what our capacities are. I did not realize that Leanne did not have a desktop, that she literally was running off of a tablet for everything she did. And maybe a desktop, talking to IT, I think you've already talked to IT about what may be available or what we need to look at. If we need to ascertain just how much computing power she needs and still be mobile, I think that I would be willing to bring in. I do have a laptop that's Windows-based. I never use it. But I have a laptop. She could use that.
See
what she needs.
Right.
If we need something, let's get it.
The second one is, I'm not sure how, if we're talking about an intern, which I like the idea of both possibly a college-age intern, but also we had a presentation from the schools.
Right.
Looking at those possibilities, because in my mind, it is, while I appreciate Leanne coming in every Tuesday and setting up video and spending her time doing that, her time can be better spent doing some other things, and I'd like us to get to a system where somebody else can do this stuff, and I think this is a good first step. Marty, you want to make the motion?
I would then move the purchase of the camera package for the audio-video capacities with a one-year license for a multimeter software package for $1,539.86 and FY17 dollars.
Yeah, and I'll second it, Laura, since you put it all together. I'll second it. Any further discussion?
None.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Olson?
Aye.
All right. Passes. No agency reports, no departmental reports, no other reports. Public forum number 2. See you guys. Opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that were not on today's agenda. We won't take any action due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody? Seeing no one moving the microphone, liaison assignments. Marty, I'll start with you today.
Nothing.
Loris.
Well, we kind of covered a couple of the things that I was doing last week, right? So the software and discussing about some of the issues. I did talk to Alyssa, and I think Alyssa's communicated with Barb. We're going to do a little more investigation in about why we're having some of the sound problems having, and also take a look at this laptop and find out why there may be some issues or what issues we're having with some PowerPoints.
Yours specifically.
mine, although I did go, I will tell you, I went to Jessica
Reynolds afterwards, and I said, thank you for bailing me out. Were you being kind in saying that they sometimes had problems, or do
no,
other people really
bet.
Have problems? And they had problems.
But it did hit you. Really
right. I will point out also today, I just realized I sat here for probably a lot of the meeting with my mic turned off.
And well,
hopefully, I mean, earlier when it was still going green. So
members of the public, if you didn't get to hear her, Loris did speak a lot during today's meeting.
Oh, just chatting. So that's one thing. You heard basically the update about Jessica. I think Jessica's actually planning on bringing back to the board in a more formal about what she's discovered as she works through this process about proprietary information contracts and also needing to take a look at this. So
well, as a really good county attorney, which Jessica is, I would expect everything she's going to do is going to come back to us in formal form, not informal at all. Just keep right on going with announcements. And just when you're done with this one more thing, keep right on going into announcements.
Okay, got it. I did attend the Story County Housing Task Force meeting last Thursday. And I think the key thing here that I got out of this is I did invite them to send a request to us for actual funding based upon their needs of the $50,000 minimum from a variety of sources. The other thing is I had a brief conversation with a couple of the people afterwards that they are not anticipating themselves about really being, during the fiscal year 18, looking at any big project or any need of big money, if you will, which was helpful to me because it let me look at, then open up for other projects we might be interested in once, if we decide to go with the TIF money and go for nonprofits, which might be there. But that was an enlightening meeting, and I they will be getting with me privately for more training on exactly what their purposes are so that I can further define any avenue we would go down other than providing some basic funding.
Yeah, and so I read the article. I thought it was a really good article on you guys' conversation with the Housing Trust Fund. I just one word of caution, and I know you know this, it just didn't come through real clear in what I read. At this point today, there's no mechanism for Story County to
correct.
Utilize TIF funding
correct.
For any of that.
Correct.
We would have to go in and change what our criteria is to get there. And so I just wanted to underscore that. Again, I know you know that. I just want to make sure that we were all clear on
it
that.
It was underscored. I know that when you only have so many inches to write, you need to kind of condense that. So I'm going to her to board on as far as meetings and announcements on Thursday morning. I was able to arrange to be able to go down to Des Moines to the HERDA board. I'll be attending that meeting.
Super. Any announcements?
Yeah, as a region last week, we are moving with to a term specific for our president as from the direction from Director Palmer in our district, and we believe we've identified our present CEO as being that person. We have
so not being a rotating.
Not being a rotating. They're looking, they're looking for some consistency of governance, and the fact that somebody that's capable, they like to have somebody in place to get some institutional knowledge built up. Also, we were the first region in the state to take on brain injuries as a core coverage, which is good on us that we've been forward-leaning and we did something good there. Also, at last night's Nevada City Council meeting, they had the first reading of a proposal from the Union Pacific to construct a rail siding east of the Key Co-op in regards to, on a contractual basis, delivery and shipment of wind turbine components.
Yeah, so we're going to start seeing some wind turbine fans and things out there on Lincoln Highway.
I would think that, yes, you have a wind turbine farm coming up in Greene County and whatnot. Maybe the point of contact will be here in Story. And it's a good story. It just, on a going forward basis, that would be pay attention. And anybody has any further questions, talk to the Nevada City Council and their administration.
All right. Now back from NACO. It was a good trip. Story County's been fortunate through the years to have Jane Halliburton and Wayne Clinton really representing Story County well. I didn't approach that level as my first trip into NACO, but Deb Shildroth and I were both out there. It's one of those things that there absolutely is value to Story County for having a presence there. That value is going to grow as somebody is more consistently there. It's hard when you go in for the first time and you don't know anybody and nobody knows you and you're not sure exactly which ones of the sessions you want to attend. But I won't ever have a first time again, so that's a good thing. And I got to have a nice dinner with my daughter in Annapolis, so that's always a bonus for a dad. And that's all.
Oh, I wanted to. How did it go in your meeting with Grassley's staff or Grassley about the?
I met with Grassley's staff on. Trying to help us with the Corps of Engineer ground. It wasn't, I walked in hoping it was going to be a slam dunk. Let me get on the phone with the Corps of Engineers and they'll be taken care of. And we didn't approach that level. But we will end up scheduling a conference call between the Corps of Engineer decision makers, people from Story County, and Grassley's office. And Grassley's office will reach out to Ernst's office and King's office to participate in that call just to try to get everything more solid. And hopefully we can move to the end. So I would not call it the success I hoped it was going to be, but hopefully we move the ball down the field just a little bit.
Thanks for trying.
Absolutely. Anything else? If not, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
See you back here at 1:00.
All right.
Going to get lunch.